Good morning, everyone. I'm going to talk on Pablo's work. So most probably I can't answer any question regarding this work, but fortunately he will be in Chapman Conference, so any questions can be referred to him there or by email. In his research regarding the activities that they are going to do in Southern Hemisphere related to IPY, the first 2 points are the stratospheric-tropospheric coupling at mid and high southern latitudes, and then look at some of the characteristics of tropopause and its behavior in that part. And then there is a part regarding the recovery and analysis of historical data in Patagonia and Antarctica. So Patagonia is here 40 to 55 degrees south, and then there is this station in Antarctica, 60 degrees south, Orcades, that they retrieved some of the historical data. And Pablo also sent some slides regarding the short-time climate variability that I included at the back of the talk, but he said that just for the general information of people. The first part is looking at my apologies for the poor quality of the slides. Basically, the plots are very poor quality, but it shows from 30 degrees south to 60 degrees south. This is the longitude from 0 and then 60 east, and then it's going forward. And these are the two-year averages of total column of ozone in tons. And this is for months of June. These are the KEDAR columns. So this is June 80 to 81, 90 to 91, 99 to 2000. And this is in October, basically winter and springtime. And the only point is that basically if we look at this is the westerlies on the southern Atlantic of ozone minima, and as we look at the decadal changes of this minima location along the longitude, we see that basically it moved and it migrated. So basically, they can see such a change in temperature. So this is temperature at 70 hectopascal. And again, for springtime, we can see that this is going westward. And this is the tropopause height, geopotential height, again for June and October. And the last one is tropopause temperature for the same part. But now what they are trying to find out what dynamical variables cause this, and is there any linkage between this migration of the ozone minima with the dynamical variables that they looked for. The first one, they did some comparison between local EP flux divergence. This is the local EP flux divergence for the same period, 80, 81, 90, 91, and 99, 2000 for the month of June in winter at 100 hectopascal. And these are the total ozone column anomalies. Again, it's from 30 south to 60, and on the x-axis we have the longitude. And now if you look at the total ozone column anomalies, you see that the anomaly accumulates or decreases based on the local EP flux divergence, basically the convergence or divergence of that variable. This is for June, and we can see the same thing happens for other decades as well. But But when we go to spring time in October, basically there is no relationship between the ozone anomalies and the EP flux divergence, which shows that in spring the dynamics in the stratosphere is the dominant factor for changing ozone, not the tropospheric disturbances. So the TOMS ozone temperatures at 400 hectopascal and tropopause, and then some other fields, and the differences were statistically compared. And it seems that in June, the TOMS ozone, the Decadal change, respond to changes in upper troposphere. However, in October, in a springtime, the comparison between the changes in ozone and the changes observed in tropopause and lower stratospheric variables shows a decoupling between these evolutions between the stratosphere and troposphere. But then they looked at the southern annual mode as it couples the southern troposphere and the stratosphere in springtime. And because this the first part of the research didn't help to find the cause for the longitudinal displacement of polar vortex that we see, and the ozone maxima, basically the high ozone regions surrounding it. So they were looking for the spatial variability in southern annual mode. And what they found, basically, they looked at the SAM index calculations at 400 hectopascal and 70 hectopascal, and for these they used ERA40, ECMWF ERA40 geopotential height data at 10 degrees longitudinal intervals. And here we see from 1980 to 2000, and then on the y-axis we have the longitude. And there is no, in the temporal evolution of SAM index, there is no spatial structure. At least there is no obvious spatial structure. So basically, the idea of SAM spatial variability does not appear to apply here, and they need a new idea, and they are looking at the upper troposphere, lower stratosphere interactions, and they are going to have more in Chapman conference. The second part is in context of IPI, they propose to retrieve and recover some of the historical data in Patagonia and Antarctica. Basically, the understanding of climate variability and climate change, both for ozone depletion and its changes, needs real observations. And it's very limited, this kind of observations, in the southern hemisphere. So they rebuilt a consistent historical data in the region, and they are going to do that for Patagonia as well. The oldest record in Antarctica belongs to Base Antarctica Orcades, which is from 1903 onward, and Argentinian government, basically, they recovered the data, and they have good data set of temperature from 1903 and for the rainfall from 1908 to early 1980s. For the temperature, it goes to present time. This is the base, basically this is Orcades at 60 degrees south, 44 degrees west. And they looked at the monthly mean temperature time series, both for surface temperature and for precipitation, using the wavelet analysis. And then they looked for the linear trends, but also for any breaking points and variability in the trends. here, basically, this is the temperature record from 1903 to 2000, and here you see this is the anomalies, and this is the month, and you can see the temporal evolution of temperature. Here it's the long-term temperature change. These are monthly means from 1903 to 2000, and you can see that basically there is a slight warming in the summer months in the southern hemisphere, and within past 2 decades there is an enhancement in the warming, which may be the same as what Thompson and Solomon proposed in their paper. In March and in June, you can see some cooling, but then as we go to July and then basically the winter, late winter and spring months, we see a strong warming in this data set. For the rainfall, the data was from 1908 to 1980s, and you can see the basically annual cycles of precipitation, and here again, if you look at the rainfall change in millimeter from 1908 to 1980, you see that in basically summer and autumn, there is a basically 50% increase in the rainfall in Orcades. In terms of IPY, this is a work that leads to IPY for them. They are going to continue with the research on the stratosphere-troposphere coupling and going to use satellite observations from 79 and continue to present time and reanalysis. In terms of Orcades, basically they are recovering the data from 1980s to present for the rainfall, and the temperature data and the rainfall data will be archived on the SPARC IPY data center. So I think that's it, and this is Pablo's email for those of you who want to contact me. Okay, so now the talk that Caru sent me, this is another IPY activity from Japan, and Caru from University of Tokyo is basically, she sent me this slide. It's regarding the first mesosphere, stratosphere, troposphere radar that's going to be implemented, deployed at 69 degrees south in Siwa, Antarctica. The radar is a pulse-Doppler radar, and the central frequency is 47 megahertz. The height coverage is from 1 kilometer up to 500 kilometers, and it's going to basically measure the winds and plasma parameters. And then it has a very fine time and height resolutions. I sent her an email asking about the exact numbers for the height resolutions, and I'm waiting for her to get back to me. So the peak power is 500 kilowatt, and this is this was a problem with installing it in Suryoa. So the The goals of this project is basically there are four major goals. First of all, they want to study tropospheric circulation by looking at katabatic winds in southern hemisphere. And then the second one, they want to look at polar stratospheric clouds and polar mesospheric clouds. For polar stratospheric clouds, look at the change in the Arctic ozone depletion, Antarctic ozone depletion, and look at the future prediction of Antarctic ozone hole. And then, because it covers up to 500 kilometers, they are going to look at the interaction of ionosphere with neutral atmosphere and look at some of the disturbances such as aurora. And then one more thing that they suggested, they are going to look at tides, gravity waves, and vertical disturbances. And then because they are measuring with high resolution, they can validate phenomena in the high resolution models. So in 2002, they started the topographical survey of the location that they wanted to install the radar. That field survey is done, and then in 2003, they found out that in Sierra Station, there is a limit for the power. They can't provide more than 200 kilowatt power to the system. So they ended up developing a new power efficient transmitters, and at the same time doubled the number of antennas, which basically half the amount of power they needed. And the estimated total power consumptions now is down to 75 kilowatt. And then they optimized the Yagi antenna. They made it lightweight, but it's like 16 kilograms now, but it can stand in winds up to 65 meter per second, and it can measure wind up to 50 meter per second. So during IPY, they have these pilot projects, the pilot radar system, using these transmitters and the lightweight antennas. The pilot system they started, and it will the installation, but the completion will be in January 2009, and they are going to do the observation for 11 years afterward for one total one solar cycle, and it's lightweight and power efficient. So I think that's all of.